I promised on during the week, if you got a text, and we do try and stay in touch, Twitter, Facebook, and emails, and the website, and so on. I was going to do three secrets, and then I was studying. I thought, actually, it's four. So then I thought, maybe I'll call it three or four secrets, just for fun. But actually, it's going to be four, and in order to, I wanted to make sure that we honored our youth and what God is doing in our midst. I really enjoyed hearing Esther's testimony. I thought that was fantastic to hear what God is doing in people's lives. And so I'm going to spread this over 2 weeks so that you're going to get the first half this week, and then you're just going to have to come back and for the second half. But I'm talking about four secrets to the God life. And before we get to those, turn with me to Psalm 8. I did tell you that, didn't I? Psalm 8, and I think it's verse 5. I want you to see this. I'm every now and then I send out these e-thoughts every day, 5 days a week, and we do those fresh, so I don't tend to regurgitate them. But every now and then I'll come to this verse, and I think I did this last week, just because of what it says. It's incredible. I'm reading the TNIV, and if you have a Bible, follow with me. If not, just listen real carefully. You ready? Verse 3 says, "When I consider your heavens," this is David, this great warrior, this great man of God, "when I consider your heavens, everything's made, the work of your fingers, and the moon and the stars, and all this that you've set in place, what are mere mortals? What are we humans that you are mindful of them? Human beings that you care for them." So he's conscious. See, I used to misread that. I thought that meant we're not very important. But what David actually is saying is, when I consider all that you made, the moon, the stars, they come out, you know, they're like the closest star, the light, which travels at, 186,000 miles a second, which is, even faster than Daniel Jando sprinting the 100. I mean, that's moving along. And it takes 4.5 years at that speed for the light to get here. And that's the closest star. There are stars that something happened 1,000 years ago and we haven't seen it yet, but the light's bringing, it's just incredible. And he says, now when I think about that, how come we're so important to you? That's what he's really saying. How come we you're mindful of us and that you care for us. And look at verse 5. Here it is. "You have made them a little lower than," and your version should say God. Now, if it doesn't say God, I want you to just take a pen, cross it out. Some will say angels. Incorrect. This one says heavenly beings. They were just a little bit dodgy. But the word is Elohim. Everyone say Elohim. And Elohim occurs 2,600 and something times in the Old Testament. And of those 2,600 times, more than 2,500 times, it's translated God. And it's translated angels once. The King James guys. What happened was, the translators are reading this. They know it says God. But they think, that can't be right. We're made a little. And their mindset dictated to them what they translated. What it actually says is, "You have made us a little lower than God, and you've crowned us with glory and honor." And I just want to, you know, see that as a kind of opening thought, that people, you and me, and all the people we see in Staines, and all the people you meet with during the week, are made just a little bit, everyone say little bit, just a little bit lower than God. And God is awesome. And I love that thought. You know, some of you know, sometimes I do some part-time work, for a number of reasons, and one of them is just to stay in touch with the world out there, you know. And I do some work sometimes in a restaurant. And when I walk around the restaurant, you know, I think that thought. I see those people there, you know, and people are funny, aren't they? I had an interesting crew the other week. And they were quite quirky, you know, quirky people. And but they were fun, and they had a great time. You know, and I look at them and I think, you guys just don't realize you're just a little. And then I see other people, you know, sometimes there's a couple there and they're like having a really nice meal, a glass of Prosecco together. And when they treat one another right and really nice and honourable, then I think, well, you're on the way. You've got a glimpse, just a glimpse of the fact that the person you're sitting with is just a little bit lower than God. and that actually you're a little, and then sometimes you see people bicker, you know, or they're angry or they're annoyed with the kids. And I think to myself, you know, if you realized you were just a little bit lower than God, you'd think twice before you acted like that. A lot of times we think that helping people behave or act correctly or believe correctly has to do with, you know, disciplines and keep reminding them, don't do that, don't do that. And there, you know, if you're raising children, by the way, there's a place for that. But the problem is if you don't counterbalance it with what the Bible says here, that these people, see, when you're raising kids, you're raising people that they are actually just a little bit lower than God. And their potential is enormous. There's not one person made that isn't made magnificently. There's not one person. That's true for you and that's true for all the people, you know. And I know what you're thinking. Yeah, well, you don't know my mother. You don't know my kids, you know. You know, I mean, you might say that, you know. But you see, what happens is that we see things a certain way, and for us to become who we're supposed to become, you've got to see things according to what the Bible said. People are precious, man. And you see, when you think about it, that's exactly what the traditional Christian doctrine would say. Jesus, for God so loved the world. So he just thinks you're awesome. And we're made just a little bit lower than God. Now, my feeling is this. If I look around at our lives, my life, your life, and most lives, I would say that most of us fall fairly short of living close to the way God lives. How many would agree? However, the potential is there. And what I want to talk about over this week and next week is four secrets on how we can become what we were obviously initially made to become. Is that all right with you? So here's a couple of verses that are just introductory thoughts as well beyond that. Just so you know that the whole where we're going with this is a biblical thought. Because it's quite different to some of the religious stuff that you might have heard over the years, you know. Religion will tend to push you down. But meeting with God will lift you up. And if your experience of God has been one that makes you feel small, makes you feel less capable, makes you feel like you probably can't, makes you feel like you're probably wrong, then that's not where God is at all. He's just believing in you when you don't believe in yourself. He's still believing in you. And what he's trying to do, and one of the reasons he sent me, is to try and get you to realize that he's believing in you. So if you start believing in you because he's believing in you, I'm not talking about just self-aggrandizement, you know, kind of self, I'm the most. I'm talking about really believing that you have value. See, why do people do dumb things? Anyone ever done a dumb thing? Man, I've done some dumb. I'm not telling you this morning, but I've done some dumb things. Some of you know some of the dumb things I've done. But, you know, one of the reasons we do dumb things, one of the main reasons, is we just forget that we're a little bit lower than God. We just forget how valuable we are. And then we might fly off the handle, or we might get all depressed, or we might, you know, write abusive letters at people or emails and get angry at people, or we might mistreat our body, you know, and we might smoke things we shouldn't or drink things we shouldn't or do things that we shouldn't. And I know you can say, you know, well, you shouldn't do this because it's not good for you, and I do understand that. But when people start thinking, hang on a minute here, I was made in the image of God. It'll change the way you live. So, here's Jesus speaking, John chapter 10, and he says this, I have come so that you would have a pretty difficult life and you'd endure, but you'd just wave a little flag saying, let's just hang in there and grind through until Jesus comes back. Is that what your version says? I've come that you would have abundant life. The word means just over the top, more than enough. Too much life. Just nudge the person next to you and say, too much life. That's why he came. He came from heaven to earth with this view. See all those people out there? Is the Father speaking to him? There's 7 billion, however many there are. And there weren't that many then, but however many there are. Jesus came and he looked at them all. He said, let's give them all abundant life. That was his object. And then we've got this other one. Now, this is just an awesome verse. It's one of my favorites. I put there that God said it, because in 1 John 4:17, if you've never read it, you can put it in your Bible or have a check out of it, but we're going to move pretty quickly through these things this morning. I've 2 points I've got out of the four to get to you, and we're still introducing this thought. But listen to this. As he is, so also are we in this world. Isn't that crazy? As God is. What do you think God would be like in the world? Pretty relaxed. Wouldn't get sick too often. Wouldn't get depressed too often. I'm not having a go at you if you get sick and get depressed, because I've been to both those places. So, but he'd be, I think he'd have a fairly confident approach to life, don't you? Imagine if God went for a job interview. I don't think he'd be, you know, like he wouldn't be all nervous. He's kind of like, well, I'm just leaving this all in the hands of God. Well, actually, I'm leaving it in my own hands. See, and so God's not nervous. He's not angry. He knows everything. There's nothing he can't do. He's full of love. He's full of wisdom. And the Bible is saying here, it's the same John that wrote the first bit. He said, as he is, as he is. So that's a really good thought to get in your thinking. The way God is, that's how we are in the world. So when you get up in the morning, now, of course you can take this to an extreme. Just avoid the extremes, all right? When you get up in the morning, you look in the mirror. You don't say, oh, I look terrible. You say, you know, that guy looks a lot like God. Unless you're a woman. In which case you say, that woman looks a lot like God. And all the religious thoughts will come. All the old thoughts will come out of the woodwork. Believe me. Oh, that can't be right. But you see, that's why you've lived less than what God wanted you to live. Now, there, of course, there's an extreme. I'm not talking about walking down the street saying, yeah, well, I'm like God. So, you know, I'll have that there in the shop. I'll have those. And I'm not paying because I'm God. You'll just give it. I'm not talking about arrogance, because that's not like God. I'm talking about this incredible, gracious, God-given confidence as he is. It's a really good thought. As he is, so are we in this world. I want to show you one more verse here, and then we're going to kick into our 4 points at the start of them. Let's go to the next slide here. And I want you to see this, because this is important to understand. This is Paul the Apostle talking about what he as a minister understands ministers to be. And he said, he writes these Corinthian guys and he says, now listen, this is how you're to look at us ministers sent to you, as servants of Christ and stewards of God's secret truths. And I think it's important to realize that we need a really healthy balance. You see, sometimes in church life, the minister is like, and you know, I've been around church life for like 30 years, so I've seen most things and heard most messages and met enough people. Sometimes churches create this culture that the minister is completely beyond reproach and he should be almost worshipped, you know, and everything he says is correct. And that's very, very unhealthy and not right. Then you have the other extreme of the culture that we also need to be careful of, which is this kind of, well, you know, the pastor wasn't very good today, you know, and he thinks this, but I don't really agree with that. I think that this is more. And we put ourselves in a place of no recognition of whom God has sent. Now, you've got to walk down the middle of the road with that one. Are you with me on that? Which means, in real terms, this. I want you and I encourage you to be reading the Bible, praying, seeking God, loving the Word of God, reading stuff and learning and growing without me there. Because it would, otherwise we have a dependent relationship that's not healthy. My job is to empower you, to release you, to help you. And you are going to read some things in the Bible, I certainly hope. And when you pray, you're going to sense God speaking to you about things that might not be exactly what I'm saying on a Sunday. Are you with me? Because that would be unhealthy. But then on the other hand, Paul's writing here and he says, now we are stewards of God's secret truths. A steward is somebody who looks after something. So for example, we received tithes and offerings this morning, and all that money, all that finance will be carefully counted by the people that do that. And we have two people that cross-check it and sign it. And then we have a different person that banks it. And then we account for all that. And then we pray over it. And then our elders or our leadership team talk about what we're going to do. because I'm going to stand before God, ultimately me and then the people around me, and report back to God about what I did with that money, how I stewarded that money. Are you with me? And so that's what stewarding is. I've given a responsibility. Now, what he's saying here is that you should look at ministers as servants of Christ, so they're serving God, and they're stewards of God's secret truths. In other words, there are truths, there are certain things that God reveals to us as ministers that is given to us that isn't necessarily given to everybody else, and my job is to make that known to you so that I help you in your Christian life. Are you with me? Now, if you take that to an extreme, then it gets all very tricky. Oh, I know all these things about you. God has revealed to me many things about you that you don't know about yourself. You know what I mean? And it can become manipulative and controlling. And probably some of us have been through that. And that's dangerous and unhealthy. So I'm not advocating that. But I am saying that what should be happening is that I should be bringing stuff to you that's fresh, that's like, I never saw that. I didn't know that. It should be revealing new things to you. And then you add that truth with the stuff you're hearing God speak to you during the week, and you grow up in a healthy way in God. Does that make sense? All right. So I think that's really important that we understand that, because this is what I feel. I feel like God's reinventing the church, to tell you the truth. I feel like this is just a whole thing going on. All the different friends we have a good number of friends and healthy relationships and different networks, and God's opening all kinds of doors. But I feel like there is a shift happening in the church in terms of, and I think understanding this is a part of that, because I see both those extremes too frequently. I see an extreme where what a friend of mine calls the man of God syndrome, you know? And I believe in the man of God. And I believe that people send men and women. And if we have people here in the pulpit, they're not there just because she's not there, Carrie's not there just because she's my wife, because there are plenty of situations where you wouldn't necessarily have a wife. She's there because God's anointed her to be there. And she does some things and not other things just because of the gifting. And I'm keen to discover what your giftings are and raise them up and see you become all God called you to be. The man of God syndrome, though, can be a little bit excessive. It can be, you know, and certain church cultures. And I think that the thing that concerns me about that is that the people aren't lifted to be like God as much. They all think he's like God, but they don't always realize I'm also supposed to be like God. And his job is to bring, or her job, is to bring some of the things that God's deposited in their life because of their calling to empower me to become all I'm supposed to be. Are you with me? So I wanted to stay on that point for a moment. All right, let's go. Are you ready? I've got 2 points for you today. Secrets to the God life. You ready? Here's number one. Your vision. Or as Yongi Cho says, your vision. Everyone say your vision. It was Cho that said, show me your vision and I will show you your future. What you see is what you become. Now, I want to do a little experiment. Who is there here in the congregation that's played a little bit of cricket? You played a little bit of cricket. You know a little bit about cricket. Have you? All right, we've got Dave. You're keen? Do you know how to bowl? Roughly? You know roughly how to bowl. All right, how many people are there that have never played cricket? You've never played cricket. All right, so I'm going to do a little experiment then. Dave, can you come out? And what I want you to do, Bobby Ruganza, you've never played cricket. Have you ever seen it on television, Bob? You've seen a bit. How many people haven't even seen very much cricket on TV? You've just seen maybe a little bit, not much. Not much cricket on TV, huh? Never played. Cool. What about you, Toz, then? You come on up. I'm going to do a little now. What I want you to do, Dave's going to face that way, right? And we're going to talk about bowling, okay? Bowling the ball. So in cricket, you're bowling and you're batting. You probably know that. But you never watched it? Hardly ever. Okay. So what I want you to do, Dave, here, is you've got to explain in words how to bowl. All right, so from the very beginning. So I'm picking up the ball, I'm putting it in his hand, and that's all we have. And you get to explain. I'll give you a mic. Okay.
There you go. Thank you. Okay, well, you'd start, you know, several meters back from the crease, which is the line that you actually bowl from. Okay. We're going to bowl slow, yeah? Okay. I'm not describing that. Okay. So, we'll say the crease maybe was where Pastor Paul had you stood at the start. So you'd run up to that point, and then you'd leap in the air off. I'll assume you're right-handed, off your right foot, which would face more right angles to the way you're running. And then you need to, with your right hand, swing that around with a straight arm, bringing it over your shoulder. And then as you land on your left leg, you'd bring that across your body and release the ball when it's sort of over your head. Hopefully aiming not too close to me, but this way somehow.
Thank you very much. All right, now, Dave, actually, I need you back. Now, Eli, you don't know much about cricket, haven't watched cricket. I'm going to get Dave back now, because Dave told me he knows a little bit about cricket, so, you know, he's a fan, actually. Eli, you come out here for me for a moment. Come on. You ready? And what you're going to do, right, is just watch what he does and try and do the same thing. All right, so he's going to just do it a couple of times. You just do your bowling thing. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Gibbs bowls. Beautiful. And one more time. It's a nice action there. All right. Eli, see how you go. Not bad. Do one more for me, Dave. Good. And Eli. Very nice. Give them both a big hand. Thank you. Thank you. And my point is, it's a lot easier to learn something by seeing it than trying to describe it. And we learn mostly through what we see. That also explains one of the kind of phenomena, if you study psychology, and I've mentioned this before, but it's a really important point to note. You know, when you deal with kids that have been raised in untoward or not ideal circumstances. So, for example, with a violent parent or with a drunken parent or with a parent that's abusive for whatever set of reasons. And that child has been affected, obviously, by that. Then normally what happens once the child kind of gets a little bit older, maybe 12, 13, 14, normally what they say is, I will never be like my father or my mother. And it's passionate and it's strong felt. And yet the statistics will show you that that very child is far more likely to be exactly like their parent than the average person is. And yet they swore black and blue they wouldn't be like that. Why? Because of the power of vision. It's what you saw all the time. Even though you didn't want to do it, you saw it so much that it became a pattern for you, and you end up... Now, that is what we call vision, you see. I want to do one more quick exercise with you, and it's going to need you to all stand up. And what I want you to do is stand upright, and you can't move more than a few... You can turn around on your spot, and I want you to take about 10 seconds to look around the room and see all the items that are red in colour. You ready? Go. Count them. Try and recollect them. All the items that are red. Crimson will pass. Pink will pass. Red. That's what we're looking at. Okay, good. You can be seated. How many people got five or more red items? Six. Seven. Eight. Nine. Ten. Very good. Impressive. How many of you feel like if I asked you to close your eyes, you could identify probably at least half of where those red items are? Just wave your hand. Cool. All right. Now what I want you to do is look at me and tell me where, to the best of your knowledge, are all the blue items. Anybody? You only only by what you can see now. You got any idea where all the blue people are seated? And the reason is, you saw what you were looking for. There are, of course, lots of blue items. In fact, there's more blue items than red items. But the point is that what you look for is what you see. And it fills your vision to the point where you don't even know if there's something else. Now, let me quote you a little statement from Jesus. It's in Matthew chapter 6, and I don't know the verse, so don't worry about it. But you can look it up in your own time. But Jesus is as part of the Sermon on the Mount, and he talks about it, the eye. You might remember this, and he says, now, if your eye is bad, then your body will be filled with darkness. But if your eye is good, then your body will be filled with light. It's a very unusual thing that he says. And yet I used to wonder for years, I wonder, what on earth are you talking about? If my eye's bad, so what, if I have astigmatism, then my body's filled with darkness. If I have like a disease in my eye, and if my eye is good, what does that mean? If I have better vision? But what he's actually talking about is your vision. He's not talking about the physical capability of your eye. He's saying if what you look at is good, then your body will be filled with light, filled with good stuff. If what you look at, if your eye is bad, if what you look at is bad, then your body's going to be filled with darkness. In other words, what you look at fills your life. Are you with me? Now, I'm talking about secrets to the God life. And the way you look at life, somebody once said it this way, and it's a really good way to say it. Your outlook depends on what you look out of. Your outlook on life doesn't, it's not objective. You might look at a situation and say, my husband is like this, my job is like this, my life is like this, and you think you're being objective, but you're not. What you're doing is conditioned by the way you've trained yourself to see over many years. I'm talking about one of the four main reasons why people fall short of this God life. Because here's the thing, God wanted you to live an abundant life. So let me ask you a couple of questions here. When you think about these areas of your life, number one, the weather. Think about the weather for a moment. The weather here in England, the weather this summer. Now, my question is this, do you believe that it was, is your thinking that it's mostly was pretty good? Or mostly was pretty miserable? Or it was kind of average? How many feel like it was really good weather? Okay, that's good. That's what I would call positive, a positive outlook. What about this? What about my job? Do I feel about my job that it's pretty good? I kind of enjoy it. Or do I feel like, this goes wrong if I think about my job? Same with my family situation. What about my financial situation? Family and finances, big issues. What about my family situation? When I think about my family, I think, yeah, it's good. Everything's good. Or do I think, it needs some work? Now, it's bound to need some work because everything does. My question is, what's your initial response? What's your feeling about it? Same with your finances. Now, we all need, even Esther Troy, who works in finance, admitted as much. We all need to keep working on our family. But if you look at your financial situation, how do you feel like, yeah, no, this is good. We're doing good. Or do we feel like, oh, gee, there's pressure here, there's problems here. My point, what I'm trying to get through to you here, is that what you see is conditioned by what you're looking for more than what actually is the case. You can be positive. You can see positive in a negative situation. So you can be in a really... So for example, in the last week, I prayed along this line before. In the last week that we've had here in the UK, you know, we've become aware of the nature and increasingly aware of the nature of the depths of problems and horrific religious extremism and genocide and the whole deal over in the Middle East. And yet my guess is that probably somewhere during the week we found some things about our own life to complain about. And we probably said things like, I wish this didn't happen. Or why does this happen? Or why didn't I get a car park? Or why didn't the people, or why was the tube full? Or why is this, I was at this shop and last week this was less expensive and now they put the price up. Or why can't I have somebody friendly meeting me at the door? Why do I have to have these miserable people that are working at the... Are you with me? And we see, we track these things. Now, my point here is this, what your vision is like, the way you see things, conditions your life. And so you've got to train yourself to see things positively. You've got to train yourself to see yourself like God. The reason that the first point I made rung home with some people is simply because they don't see themselves like that. We tend to see ourselves as failing when God said, I made you to succeed. We tend to see ourselves as struggling. But that isn't how God sees us. So let me give you, and we're out of time because we're doing this time thing, so I'm going to have to give you 3 points next week. Is that all right? But we did a few demonstrations. They were fun, weren't they? They were helpful. All right, let me give you, out of this version of the Bible, let's go to Hebrews. If you've got a Bible there, Hebrews. And I'm just going to give you a quick couple of quick thoughts. Hebrews 3, verse 6. Have a look at that. Hebrews 3, verse 6. And then I'm going to go to Romans chapter 8. And I actually didn't have those planned, but I know they're going to be good. Hebrews 6 and Romans 8. And let me read Hebrews 6 for you. Sorry, Hebrews, did I say 6? 13, 6. Did I say 13? Did I say Hebrews 3? Yeah, see, mate. Darling, I need a glass of wine. I do. Hebrews 13, forgive me. Verse 6. So we may boldly... We'll start with verse 5. Let your conduct be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have. For, why? Because he has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. So we can confidently say, the Lord's my helper. I won't be afraid. What can anyone do to me? I want you to say that. The Lord's my helper. I won't be afraid. What can anyone do to me? Now we can quote it and we probably heard it before, but what you've got to do is make it your vision so that when you get during the week and it seems like one of your children is in terrible trouble, or it seems like you're going to lose your job, or it seems like something disastrous is going to happen, that you are content because the Lord actually is my helper and I don't have to be afraid, because what can anybody do to me? How can anybody stop me when God is with me? And then that's that companion verse, and I mentioned that in Romans 8, and that should be enough just for you to have a party this morning. Romans chapter 8, check this out here. Now I think it's about 31. What shall we say then to these things? If God be for us, and is God for you? If God, so just those two thoughts. I won't be afraid. God's with me. He'll never leave me. If God be for us. And the shift needs to come. That's what God said. That's how he wants you to live. But the shift in your life comes when you decide to make what God sees what you see. And that takes a little work. That takes changing your vision. You see, you've been conditioned, we all have, by what we've seen in our lives, by what we see in ourselves, by what we might have seen in our past church or other Christian experience. And just like the guy up here bowling, you know, we've seen it a certain way. And so that's how we do it. And what I'm saying is we sometimes need to change what we see. You need to see that God is with you. So I want you to do this and then we're done. I want you to close your eyes. And just based on a couple of verses that we had in the Bible, I want you to see yourself seated and with God right there next to you, smiling at you, believing in you, cheering for you, and looking at you in the face and say, I love you and I'm never going to leave you. There is nothing you have to worry about anymore. And sometimes thoughts will come, oh yeah, but what about this? Oh, but I'm sick. Oh, but I don't have enough money. Oh, but... And I want you to go back to the Lord. He's looking at you. And he says, I love you. And I believe in you. And there's nothing you need to worry about anymore. And you change your vision. And when you think like that, and you can keep your eyes closed, because we're done for this morning. When you think like that, you start to change how you think and act, because your action is dictated by your vision. You might see yourself as someone struggling financially. Your basic picture, as soon as the message comes, we're short of cash, the account is close to overdrawn, we can't afford this. And all it does is reinforce this picture you have of yourself that you're a struggling person. You've got to change the picture. You can't wait until the circumstances change and then change the picture, because the circumstances follow the picture. If the picture is of a struggling person, then you're going to make the circumstances fit that picture. And sometimes people don't realize that. If the picture is of a happy person, a blessed person, a person that God is smiling upon, and sometimes you have to fight really hard to keep that picture before you, because there's all these other things that have been filling your vision, and then you see red all the time and there's blue everywhere, but you just never saw it. Father, today, I want to ask you to help all of us to see ourselves the way you see us. To make a conscious choice that we are what you said we are, that you love us, that you believe in us, that you're never going to leave us, and that there's nothing we have to worry about anymore. And I ask your Holy Spirit to prompt every one of us. So as we go through this week, that we don't just look back and think, oh, well, that was a good message or whatever. But that actually you prompt us, so that when we get up in the morning, or we stop at lunchtime, or we get home in the evening or whatever, and those negative visions come, that you just prompt us and say, hey, change that. Don't see yourself like that. See yourself like my champion. See yourself like I'm with you. See yourself like God is on your side, and he's never going to leave you and forsake you or forsake you. See yourself made just a little bit lower than God. Father, bless our people today. Thank you so much for the great time we've had in your house. And everybody said yes. Cool. Give God a great shout of praise this morning.